This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us.
My name is Dr. Doug Reed, and I am located in Abigwe, the traditional and unceded territory of the Mi'kmaq people.
My name is Dr. Matthew Stranick, and I am located in Manakwisk in St. John, New Brunswick, which is situated on the traditional and unceded territory of the Wolastoqiyik Maliseet people. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the AdNonTech. Grateful to have you here. Grateful to have Dr. Doug Reed here with us. I'm Matt Stranick, and thanks a lot, for checking things out. Doug, how are you doing, sir?
Well, Dr. Matt, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself? I hear you had a big day yesterday.
Well, I've had a couple of days. My birthday was this past Friday, and, I turned 46, which to me is pretty much the epitome of a nothing year to celebrate, honestly. Anything in your 40s, it's just like, I don't know, man. It's like, you're not dead? Cool. But, I just had some nice times, my mom and a couple of my friends, and, it was nice. So, I'm Sunday of birthday weekend or whatever. Although for me, birthday weekend doesn't really mean much because I don't have a job to go to on Monday. So anyway, bro, thanks for asking.
Well, happy belated birthday. For some reason, I thought it was Saturday, not Friday, but
it's my mom got it wrong. So go figure. It's fine.
He was there the first time.
I guess, I'm even supposed to have a twin. Can you imagine? God help us all. Completely another story, but so I guess in terms of the birthday vibe, transitions, change are in the air, so to speak. So, Doug, we are talking on this episode about change in education and what role does ed tech play in this. Awesome topic, and I'm curious to hear your impetus for it, my friend.
Well, a good chunk of it was your life changes, right? When you were talking about, and there are times I am unhappy with whatever job I happen to have. There are sometimes I'm like, blah, what am I doing this for? But it's like, okay, change is inevitable. It's going to happen. But the suffering part is optional. So what?
That's true.
So can you embrace it or can you roll with it or whatever? And that's just what I wanted to talk about because I'm at a point of change now because it's time to plant the garden. And I know that's not the same as your change, but I go from having my weekends and off to do whatever I want to. Okay, I now have a commitment to weed that darn garden every weekend. So it's one of those things. Just how do we roll with it? Is this cyclical or is it seasonal or what's the deal? That's basically what I wanted to talk about.
Well, again, perfect timing for it. I don't know about your end of the Maritimes, but in my neck of the port, we are having an absolutely beauty of a day out there, a beauty of a day, perfect sunshine, blue skies. I just am like, I wish I had a a specific reason to spend a bunch of time outside today. I've got the music podcast, and I have an interview, two other commitments besides this today. So in between all that, I think I'll try and squeeze out for some sunshine, because it is absolutely friggin' rad out there. So, yeah, man, that's all good. So why don't we have a look here at our first citation, our first reference.
Before we do, yeah. I just want to congratulate you on this list, this all-star list of interviews you've got set up.
Oh, yeah.
Guys, like, holy, like, I don't think I have the ability to do that, to line that up and sort those things out the way you took it and ran. So kudos to you.
Well, okay, so first of all, thank you for that. I'll just kind of put it out there that, I mean, this is going to be largely in the notes. I'm devoting some time to this in the notes, but Doug has kind of referenced that through, you know, I've been communicating things through Facebook and whatever. And basically, I've just been approaching people on LinkedIn. I've been, you know, building up. I don't consider it a following, because, like, I just, you know, on the add or connect or whatever button, I'll just, you know, punch it in for anybody, you know, who has a shared connection with me already. I won't just randomly, you know, ask somebody, but if it's like you have 12 shared connections, whatever that even means, like, okay, I guess we might like to look at some of the similar things. So,
yeah.
So anyway, throughout this, right, I mean, you know this, the ed tech world is actually pretty small in terms of, you know, the, I don't know, upper level practitioners, in as much as people with doctorates, for instance, or people with significant years in the field, which you and I both fit that criteria. So, I mean, I was kind of just surprised when I was checking in with people on LinkedIn, how quickly people got back to me. And so far, everybody that I've asked, besides one person, you know, out of eight or nine anyway that we have coming up, have told me yes, right? And one person, you know, the person who told me no, wrote me like a four-paragraph email telling me how much, you know, they looked at the site, they looked at, you know, and they appreciate what we're doing. And that person also gave me a name of a couple of colleagues at an institution in Australia whom I haven't, you know, been aware of, but that I might want to check in with. So I just think it's part of the ongoing mandate for this show to kind of expand its scope, expand its reach as much as it can, and, you know, to take on things that are maybe outside of what we normally do. So to me, interviews are just a really good direct way of doing that. Anyway, more details in the notes and things to look forward to. Really grateful to our guest that we had in our previous episode, conversation, Dave Cormier, right? That just came out a couple days ago. It's here on the website. If you're looking at this on the website, easily searchable otherwise. So
anyway, Doug, it was awesome. It was such a nice conversation.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, it felt really natural to me. Yeah, it was good. Dave, I mean, I've seen him at conferences and videos and things. And I mean, he has a well-earned reputation as an excellent speaker. And he's clearly just a guy who cares a lot about what he's up to, right? So to me, that's just really, it's cool to have a chance to speak with somebody like that, right? Who you've kind of maybe known about for a while, but never had like a direct conversation with. So anyway, bro, as we're rolling along, as we tend to do, we have what, Kent and McNerdy, 1999, taking a trip in the Wayback Machine for this one, my friend. What's with this one?
This isn't even the Waybackiest one that I found. The
Waybackiest one.
There was one from 1937 I was going to use, but I just couldn't shoehorn it into the conversation I wanted to have. So this article is about, will technology really change education? And they're talking about retrospection and how, hey, whatever the current technology is that we're pushing, let's put that in context with all the other previous technologies we've tried to reform education with. And it's like, oh, can you imagine? It's like that old quote, people that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. But
wow,
people that do know history are doomed to watch those who don't know history repeat it. So it's one of those multi-layered things. And one of their quotes talked about the common pattern of what happens when you put technology in education. And there's a cycle of exhilaration, scientific credibility, and then disappointment, and then teacher bashing. And it was just, yeah, I've been there. I've seen that. I've sat in the meeting saying, how come you're not using that thing? We paid a lot of money for that. And it just, it's like, hey, it doesn't work the way we need it to work. It's not helping the students learn, so we're not doing it.
Doing them a favor by keeping the intervention out in some instances, right? Like, people sort of think it's just sort of like, you know, a perfectly neutral thing to introduce a new platform or application or whatever. Whereas when it doesn't go well, or if it's misaligned with the objectives of the, curricula, when it's just, it's not in keeping with the students' needs in that particular cohort, I mean, you can make a decision. It's like, not only am I going to avoid a negative experience, but it's like it's a negative experience at the expense of the positive, right? And then, because then you have to rationalize it. Then you have to move on from it in such a way. And anybody, as you start to gain experience in the field, you just start to get sort of like a bit of a spidey sense almost for, you know, what's going to interact well in your setting and what others aren't. And I mean, that's what you're teaching learning centers for, to be able to give you guidance on what, you know, opportunities to integrate technology and other things may exist. So, yeah, man.
When you're in a post-secondary institution, your area of expertise is usually whatever discipline you study, whatever that happens to be. And the Center for Teaching and Learning people, their discipline is teaching and learning. So
they are the,
why
the
not leverage your knowledge?
Yes, exactly. Leveraging their knowledge. They are the meta department, which is what I just rudely said over you, because it sounded so clever in my mind's ear that I just had to get it out right that second, apparently. Goodness.
Yeah, but it's true. It is so true that that's exactly what it is. Now, sometimes there are also the poor people saying, please, please use those clickers. We spent $5,000 on the clickers. We got to use them. Please use them. So there's that component of it, too, where they could tick a box and say, yep, three instructors used clickers this semester or something. But so they're caught in a bind, too. It just makes me laugh. It's like, nope, not touching those. I've never figured out how clickers can work with my teaching.
And yet some people live and die by clickers.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
sure.
And I met two people that did, and what they did, it was amazing. The way it worked with their flow and how they designed their learning, it was awesome. Because I was watching one of their PowerPoints, and I'm like, what's this thing? Oh, that's when we introduced the clickers. And they had it all designed and laid out, and it worked so well. And I'm like, good for you, right? They embraced the technology. They made it work for them and their students, and that's what we're here for. So congrats. I always just pick on clickers because I could never figure them out. And I never had that $3,000 or $5,000 to get the case or whatever, that penguin case or whatever they call it. What are those ones where they have the little pieces of foam cut out perfectly so the things fit right in the little slots?
I've not had as much experience with them or exposure as you described. My whole basis for what I sort of look for intellectually is minimalism. And I don't mean like minimalism in some kind of abstract kind of modernist context. I mean, like, what's the least amount of effort and process required to fulfill an objective, like any given objective, right? Like,
yeah.
What's the most direct, straightforward way of accomplishing this thing? And for me, clickers just don't jive with that. It's just like, I fail to see how, you know, for myself and not for other colleagues who find that a thing, but for me, it's like, it's just a remote control thingy to what? Like, you know, get them to want to answer questions a little bit more. I mean, it's just the whole behaviorist kind of thing with it. It's not really, yeah. I mean, it's just, I got different, a different world outlook than would accommodate that. And I feel like I've got enough experience that I could come up with something equally engaging, equally robust, that doesn't involve a clicker, you know, but other people, it would be converse to that. So,
and for me, one thing I've used is clickers 2.0. Like I use Kahoot, where everybody downloads the app to their phone and they can do that. I see Kahoot as clickers 2.0 becomes more valuable. It does a lot of the stuff I want it to do with the little noises and the dances. And sometimes we have the scoreboard with who's doing what and how that's going. So I've used those in class very successfully. My students told me they enjoyed it and they seem to enjoy it. So I'm not bagging clickers. I just think that let's get to the next step. Let's get to the second or third or fifth version of them.
There we go. Sure. Clickers 5.0 coming to an ed tech stand in 2030s ish. Check back on that.
And at some point, I do have Kahoot down as a topic that we can discuss in an episode, that's fine. But not this one.
Yeah, well, I'm, you know, one thing that's sort of with my situation now, where like I'm looking for work again for the second time in a year and a half, is that like it may provide the opportunity to step back into some kind of classroom training, you know, like actual, mm-hmm. you know, actual facilitation.
Teaching, yeah.
Yeah, which I have, I've done a lot of it, but it's also been a while. So like just to kind of, if the opportunity were to arise, and in fact, I'm still under consideration for one pretty awesome job that would involve like a lot of classroom facilitation.
Nice.
It's just like, that's kind of what you just described is just kind of like, if I was a regular full-time classroom teacher for like the past 5 years, my thinking on this might be different. My thinking might be, okay, so again, get out the phone and use your, you know, personalized, you know, environment that's in your pocket. Get it out of your pocket and, you know, use that dopamine processing social media gunk that we all have built up now. For a positive, right? For a productive win of sorts. Again, every educator is different. Every setting is different. We are, we're not about, you know, all purpose remedies or prescriptions on this show. It's all about context. If I knew how to drive or had a car, I would get a bumper sticker that says honk if context is everything, you know, but, be a lot of work to get to that point, to have that particular bumper sticker on my non-existing car.
True enough.
Dude.
True enough.
Are we ready for
Ellsworth?
I'm going to try and pronounce it.
We're at Ellsworth 2000.
Okay, good.
You're skipping one. So well, this is about surviving change.
But surviving change. Certainly. 2000, right before 9/11. Go figure.
Yeah. And it says change. And for me, this is when I made the move. In early 2001, I moved to Australia. I finished my master's in Calgary and I moved to Australia to do my PhD. So this resonates with me because it was at the exact time when I was having massive change in my life. And so change, it happens. Why should we care or try to understand its nature? Change surrounds us. We are immersed regularly in its process. And for me, it's, I want to understand things, right? Like I have this brain that needs to get in to try to understand what's going on and how to roll with things and how to adjust to things and how to just accept. Accepting is normally the hardest part for me. That's why I do as much meditation as I do, because it's just coming to grips with it. It comes back to, we know what's going to happen. And some of the awesome things, like when we had our conversations about, let's do some interviews, let's talk to some other people, that was obvious to you, I believe. It was not obvious to me, but I had some people saying, oh, when are you going to start doing that? And it had never twigged to me that that was a direction that was worth going. And now you headed down there and it's awesome. And it's like, oh, okay, I get it.
Well, I'm glad, you know, in terms of that, in terms of the format, and again, thanks for, you know, your support and enthusiasm for that, you know, addition to the series. For me, it was sort of in terms of that, it was going to be, it was something that was in my mind from the get-go. It was just, it seemed to me like the most natural way to get people interested who aren't us. Basically, it's like, what's going to make somebody interesting? Well, if you get them on it and then they can share it with their friends, or they can show evidence of professional impact or academic impact by such appearance. You know, if it's a bullet that they can put on a CV or an academic report or whatever, and that's just the most cynical version of it. But I mean, honestly, it was very much from a practical sense of just, how can we expand the scope of the show? How can we get more people interested? And just to speak to the fact that even with the with the lectures, right, with the three lectures that we did for, you know, for Dr. Pam Gurney's education classes, we're now into the spring semester, right? Those three lectures were largely prepared during the winter term. And now, like, an entire group of students that, other than who interacted with the EDI, particularly video with Dr. Hassan Arif, I've got just, since about last Thursday, about 34 original new comments by students that need replies to that. You know, so people like are just, that was, it was sort of something where, like, I knew that my own voice on that particular topic, EDI, was going to be insufficient. So practical standpoint, you bring in with somebody with lived experience who is not just your sort of stereotypical white academic guy. I mean, just, you know, that conversation has been viewed, you know, more than 100 times. And it's just earned, it's just created a whole really cool raft of engagement and discussion, which you contributed to with your replies. So, I mean, thanks for that. So, yeah, I mean, again, it's just, it's, had I not been removed, I wasn't removed. Had my job not been eliminated from the commissionaires due to strategic realignment, then I would not have necessarily just gone, okay, top 12 academic people, basic or e-learning people, basically in the world. I know them on LinkedIn because LinkedIn is ridiculous. Just chung, 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 chung. I wouldn't have. Because now I'm just looking at it like I have nothing, you know, for a full-time job except podcasting and writing until I get a real job, you know, real as in paying and with benefits, let's be clear. So, yeah, man, change, ubiquitous. We swim in it.
And that is the best example of how LinkedIn can help that I have ever heard, because I struggle with LinkedIn.
I get it.
It's one of those things. Now, coming back to Ellsworth for a couple of seconds, Ellsworth looked at a whole lot of educational change models, and we're describing all these different ways. And I honestly believe that of the models that Ellsworth took a look at, I think some of them are just too theoretical. Like, how often has it been, yep, we're making a change. I was at an institution one time where the president, in a meeting with a whole bunch of other post-secondary presidents, announced that our institution was going to Moodle.
Oh.
And we all found out when the press release for that meeting came out. And then somebody went to talk to the president and said, when did that happen? I decided. And it's like, okay, so you know the ins and outs? And he's like, nope, but it's happening because Moodle's the way to go. Like with no understanding of what the heck had to happen.
What a bold visionary leader.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't last much longer, but that's beside the point. I happened to live in a neighborhood that he was in. And one day there was like 18 police cars and they spent the day taking paperwork and boxes out of his house. So I don't know what happened there.
All of it to do with Moodle.
Like, yeah, it had to be just Moodle. It couldn't have been anything else. But it was just that.
People have been, yeah.
We need a model. There needs to be a, here's the steps forward. Let's project manage this. So everybody's kind of on the same page with the communication. Because we talked about clarity and communication in our recent podcast, right? Without the clear communication, right. What are we doing? And change is scary enough. Without communication, it just makes it worse. Now,
yeah, lack of transparency and lack of just general system-wide communication has certainly been the hallmark of post-secondary institutions since they were invented, I'll bet, back in the day.
So I want to jump to this Finnish article. It's Santanen is professional agency in the stream of change, understanding educational change and teachers' professional identities. And it was the teacher identity part that I wanted to get to, because we all have our understandings of who we are and what we do and how we do it and all that stuff. And organizations change and innovate, and they need to develop their practices. And some disciplines do it really well. Like I like the disciplines where you have to get this much PD time in. You have to make sure you go to a certain number of conferences a year to get your, they're not credits, but to get your, to make sure you're still on top of whatever your professional practice is.
To maintain a membership in good standing within your professional association or what have you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think education does that well. I don't think it does. When I was a teacher in Alberta, like I was a K-12 teacher, and we had those 2 days in February where it's like that Thursday, Friday, and we went down to whatever, the conference center, convention center in Edmonton. There was two people I worked with. They stood at the bottom of the escalators. And they stood there for 2 hours and they made sure everybody saw them. They said hi to every other teacher. They said hi to the administration. They said hi to the administrators from the other schools in the district. And then nobody saw them again because apparently they went to one of their places and played pool for the next 2 days. But everybody saw them and there was no tracking and no measurement, and at least one of their professional practices did not change in the 9 years or 8 years I knew them. So it's just, we need to come up with a better way, right? It's like, how do we adopt new professional roles? I know that oftentimes you're in a job and the new professional role is, here, we need you to do that too. It's like, am I getting any training? Am I getting any support? Am I getting more money? Am I getting time off? Nope, that's just yours too. And it drives me nuts. I had a friend. I helped a person get their PhD, and I wasn't their supervisor, but she was struggling with the current supervisors that she had. So I said, look, let me see if I can help you take a look at it. And I went through every page of her PhD. And one thing that shocked me is like, I wrote, so what? on so many pages. It's like, so what? Why do we care? What does this have to do with the topic? She's like, oh, well, that really mattered to me. And it's like, I don't care. What does this have to do with this? Right? It's like when you talk to somebody and all they want to talk about is their plants or their dogs or their whatever. It's like, okay, while that's nice, that doesn't fit in your thesis. What are you doing? But one point she made that I got her to get rid of was email. In New South Wales, there was a fight between the teachers union and the government about email. Teachers said, no, we're not doing it. And they said that back in the 90s. And so this was like a couple of pages of her thesis. And I'm like, what does this? Well, that was really important. It's like, I get you're passionate about it. Go write a paper about that. Don't put it here. It doesn't fit here. And then when I went back to teaching, I was shocked at how much time email took. Because when I left teaching, email really wasn't a thing. And I went back and it's like, holy smokes, it's taken over the world. So these changes have happened. This new professional role and this new insight was, look at all this. This is a giant time sponge. I just want to teach. I don't want to answer emails for 2 hours a day. So I'm wondering, have you seen any of those shifts in your professional practice at any of your previous positions where you're like, wait, I thought I got hired to do this. What the heck is going on? Why is this suddenly an expectation?
In terms of, professional sense of disjuncture due to new processes or technologies or whatever, the term disruption has really been overused when it comes to technology studies and the like. But, at this point, my career has just been like upside down, sideways, and in and out, and I started here, and it's just so to me, like, just kind of speaking to any specific incident or whatever isn't necessarily the most forward looking endeavor for me, but I guess just to kind of generally speak to these kinds of initiatives, I've seen the ushering in of the new learning management platform, and that's just something that it sucks every time, and yet every 5 years it seems like it just gets repeated, and it's just like, well, why exactly? Because during interviews and such, in conversation during interviews, one of my points has really been just that I got to bring in the Pareto principle, which I know is I refer to that too much on this show, but pardon me. But really, when you're looking at the LMS, it's like all of these things have the same 20% functionality that 80% of the people are going to be going to most of the time. That 20% of the feature set is going to be the same with only slight variation across all of those platforms. So, like, what's the value proposition then between shifting between one and another? Well, then it becomes the matter of a vendor representative to give you a 45-minute slideshow about the surplus and or supplementary features, right? The 80% of the features that, simply are only attracting 20% of the usage. And they're supposed to convince you that these are the most important, like the annotation feature is just sick, or the, but they're all designed to do the same thing. And, in terms of placing your content, having discussion boards, having a place where you can upload videos and other media, possibly reply to students with videos or other media. All of these platforms do the same dang thing, right? Because education hasn't changed in terms of what it does very much, apart from the format, right? Apart from the packaging. So that's kind of, I guess, what I would just sort of say as a general observance relative to that point. Am I good now?
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I've, when I look at some of this change, our stove died in our house. It was an old stove. It died. We needed a new stove. We got a new stove. I can't change the time on the clock on the stove anymore. And I can't turn the clock off. So it's either blinking or it's always the wrong time. So I need the app. So I now have this app on my phone. And the one thing the app does, like, oh, do you want to preheat this? Or do you want to have the food in the oven all day and then turn it on an hour before you get home? Or I'm like, no, I that has no value to me. I do not want to do that. And it's your Pareto principle. Like, I want it to warm up food.
Right.
When I'm standing in the kitchen, that's what I want. And instead, all this other functionality, this is wasted on me. My practice is not that, and I'm not changing my practice because this has worked my whole life. And I
exactly.
And the only reason I have the damn app is to change the clock time, because PEI internet or PEI electrical grid is not stable. I've lost my power half a dozen times in the last 6 months just because. And I remember being in Alberta. I didn't lose my power once in 20 years. So it's just one of those things. So we had to roll with the change, right? Okay, this is how they designed it now. And it was the pushing of all the extra stuff. And I took the hard look at my practice and said, no, I'm not using this. I'm not using that, which is why I understand sometimes when you're trying to bring change in into a school system or an education system, there's a generational change that has to happen. It's like, yeah, okay, these people are a couple of years from retirement. They're not changing. Don't bother bringing in a new curriculum. They're not going to change. They're not going to embrace it. Wait till they go. Or just the opposite. We want to get rid of them. Let's bring in the new curriculum to force them out because we know they're not
going
to do it.
Give the tree a shake. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's coming to grips with what is our professional role now. Because I know my grandfather was a teacher. And
he know that.
Yeah. He was in World War II. He used to load bombers in England. And then he worked on the radar stations and stuff. And he was a high school science teacher. And he got to rule with an iron fist. Right back in the day, it was, nope, out. It was just out. He'd point, out. And that kid was gone. Not from the class. That kid was suspended. Come back in a week. And now, holy smokes, the role of a teacher changes a little bit. Right? Having the kid leave the classes, the world's coming to an end. What have you done? Oh, you got to consider. It's like, no, their behavior was disrupted to everybody else. Right? Something else is going on. But it was that change in practice. Like, my grandfather would not have been able to act the way he acted then, now. Right. And he'd be 105 now. So he'd be long retired. But that's not the point. But it's dealing with the professional agency and what's my job, how do I conceptualize it, and how do we move forward?
I'm impressed that you have, that there were three generations of teachers in your family, bud. That's like a pretty impressive thing. It's just, no, I mean.
Yeah, and I really, I never thought about it. What I think about often is my other grandfather was a coal miner. And he wasn't allowed to join the army to go to World War II because coal mining was an essential service.
Wow.
But being in the army paid a lot more money. It was just one of those sorts of things. And I've never spent my career like coming home and having to strip off outside because I'm so covered in coal dust and having to wash outside before I came in the house and stuff. So I appreciate both of them.
Very what much, eh?
Yeah. So I want to talk about Means 2010. They awesome. Talk about a focus on student learning and technology and education change. And this was the newest article that I had, because I wanted to go grab a Dewey article from 37, but that was more about like society change. And I didn't want to talk about society changes and whatever, liberalism and progressivism and all that. I didn't want to go there for this conversation.
Fair enough.
And one thing that Means talks about is talking about stop thinking about learning software as an intervention. It's where we got to change our focus. And I think we have a lot of times. I know I certainly have. The intervention is not the software focus. The intervention is how are we going to help the students learn better? And that important shift we have described for 50 odd episodes now, right? That has been our core. And they talks about what we need to care about is the learning activities, the learning context, the articulation between what the students need to learn and what they've already been exposed to. How, what data are we using? Like, teachers collect data. We always do. It's like, yeah, I can't sit so-and-so next to the pencil sharpener, otherwise their mom gets mad at me because they've just plowed through 10 pencils in the last 2 minutes or the last 2 days. So it's focusing on student learning rather than focusing on whatever the tech happens to be that we're trying to push or implement. And
absolutely.
So I just really enjoyed this one because they had a nice list. I'm a big fan of the nice list of
bullet points for the win. I love bullet points. As a former technical writing teacher, bullet points are my jam. That's.
Yeah. And I like to call them dot points just as a contextual point. Because bullet can seem a little aggressive.
Right.
Or for people with trauma, people that have had to deal with actual bullets, I don't want to, and I don't know people's backgrounds, so I just try to make it as a neutral a point as possible.
Good point. I had not considered that.
Yeah, back in the 90s, the Washington basketball team, they're the Wizards now, right? The Washington Wizards?
They changed from being the Bullets. Yeah.
They changed from being the Bullets because it had the highest gun violence rate in the United States or something like that, whatever those numbers were. But what I really liked, I just liked the concept of, okay, if we're going to make a change, right, these are the things we need to care about rather than
right.
Somebody making a knee-jerk reaction in a meeting or somebody saying, yeah, let's make a change. And the people underneath them are saying, yeah, okay. And I don't know why. In my examples, but it's almost always guys. It is like the old white guys that are making the decision when it comes to so many of these technology changes that have not either been thought through clearly or have not been communicated with any sort of clarity.
Well, I mean, when it comes to procurements and when it comes to sort of upper management / executive level people within higher education, I think calling them in your mind's eyeball white older men is probably accurate relative to the cohort. So, but no, nah, man, that's all some really good stuff. And I think just, you know, to speak to your points a little bit is just to the fact that, yeah, I mean, let's maybe key in on curricular interventions, pedagogical interventions, as opposed to conflating technological procurement decisions with something that has to, you know, be involved significantly within the learning process, honestly. So some good stuff. So are we ready to crack on in here to the question, word, and phrase of the podcast?
Just before that, I've shared some pictures on the webpage. So you can go to analogtrope.ca/podcast to take a look, or oios.ca/ent to take a look.
Awesome.
And get there both ways. And One I really enjoy is by Paulo Coelho, and it's like Change, but start slowly because direction is more important than speed.
That's fantastic. He's a really well-regarded, really fantastic literary novelist, and I have friends who just love everything he's ever written, and that is absolutely in keeping with him as a writer and also just generally thoughtful advice anyway. So that is for sure a valued visual, which is going to be up on the old Analog Trope WordPress. Yeah, you got some other ones here too. Fewer cartoons this time. There's more quotes and fewer cartoons than what I'm used to, but
I couldn't. I went through my digital clutter, and right. I hadn't categorized the names and the titles of so many of my cartoons by Change.
Wow.
There was one or two, and it's like, nah, it just didn't work.
They didn't take this time. Well, you can't force it. You can't force a format. You know, it's really better just to be authentic and let that authenticity rule the day. So that's what we're up to here.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to be up to anyway.
Much as we can. Yeah. So what do we got here up the word? I see we may have two words here in the notes.
Yeah, I initially had said change was going to be the word of the podcast, but then you picked the word disruption, and I'm like, that's a better word. That is a better word of the podcast, because that's really what I was really trying to get to. So that's okay. I didn't pull the thesaurus out, so I really enjoyed the way you turned that phrase, and
I just think it. Well, thanks. And I mean, I just think that word is probably overused. It's definitely overused. And when it comes to, like, I don't know, like middle-aged dudes in managerial roles, like, I am an agent of disruption, you know, I'm like, nobody gets, you know, it's just like, man, just friggin' jump off a cliff without a parachute. But yeah. But that being said, authentic disruption is like challenging. Authentic yes. disruption is like, I mean, it's just, it's gonna cause discomfort. And there's like, it's just more like, what are you being asked to get? You know, what's causing the discomfort? What are you being asked to do mm-hmm. relative to the benefit, right? Fine, disrupt me. I mean, whatever. My parents were divorced. I'm divorced. I can take some disruption, people. But like, it's got to be relevant. Like, there's got to be something at the end of the disruption where, and I think that's the selling job that a lot of administrators just fail to get to. It's going to be disruptive. It's going to kind of shake up your thing, and then they just kind of. So the benefit, though, what's the, you know, I don't mind being disrupted. What's the benefit? And they got nothing, because it's just like, does it do anything other than the 20% of the things that I need it to do that the other thing does well? No, not so much. But the vendor had a slick PowerPoint. So what can you do? Or even more the case, the vendor knows a guy that the person in question plays golf with or whatever, right? So anyway, yeah. good times. It's
with disruption, and I understand the point of it, but disruption so often isn't positive. Mm-hmm. Right? Disruption, like I know some of those middle-aged white guys that are proud mm-hmm. to be disruptors, and it's like, no, you're using it as a buzzword. And you're not putting thought into it. You're just right. messing it.
You're just being authoritative. You're pushing down below on your subordinates, and you're foisting something without giving it due consideration. That's a recipe for system failure. Actually, you want to call it disruption? Like, okay, Bro.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever, as a kid, did you ever play card games?
Somewhat. A little bit of 21 or bust, a little bit of crazy eights.
Yeah, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I was one time, like, my extended family played cards. We did a lot of that when we went to visit our grandparents. And one of my cousins, who I don't have much use for, I haven't talked to in years, but one time we were playing, and he's like, hey, let's play 52 Pickup. And I'm like, oh, okay, what's that, right?
Hell I was up game.
For that. And he's like, you're a cab driver. Here's your passengers. And he just threw the cards across the room. Yeah, go pick them up. And it's like, so that's disruption. But he was being a jerk about it. And it's like, okay, right. This is no fun. You just ruined all this. And now I'm done with you. Right, I'm done. Nope, not playing with you again. You're not touching the cards because I'm cleaning up your mess. And you are laughing about the mess you made. And it's just that kind of mentality. Okay, well, my question to the podcast is, how can we make change easier to adapt to in education? Because it's going to happen. What can we do? And we talked about some of the things we could do.
Absolutely. Be sure to check the show notes for the references and further resources on the topic, quite frankly. No, it's absolutely true. And, I don't know. I mean, I just feel like my whole, recent career has just been, either like as somebody who's, you know, associated with a change that's supposed to occur, like with the ed tech coordinator role. I mean, I was sort of as part of a lot of, you know, the implementation of stuff, including, you know, stuff that got changed. And then with the commissionaire's role, I mean, I basically built an e-learning suite from scratch. And then the desired thing was just, well, I mean, the change that we were going to make by hiring you, we're not making. So the unmaking becomes its own change and response. It's all very interesting. The educational career. Anyway, pal, what do we got for the phrase?
It's another one of your quotes. I like the way you turn phrases. It's when it is not in keeping with the student needs.
Ah, yes.
And I really enjoyed when you said that because it's just, that's what we're about. It's we're about the students and what they need to learn. That's what education is, right? It's not just blah, 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 and whatever it is you're and covering the content. It's about the students learning. If the students aren't learning, what are we doing?
100%.
So that was the phrase. I really enjoyed the turn of phrase, and it came right to the point of things. I couldn't get the rest because that stuck in my brain, and you kept talking. I don't know if I took a breath for a while. So no, it was all good. I really enjoyed it.
Well, I mean, that is what the transcript is for. Not that we're doing transcripts, but if any book publishers are interested in written transcripts on the way to a printed bound variant of this podcast for certain financial remuneration, we are more than happy to entertain such notions. The Ed Non-Tech book. I'm unemployed, or I should say, sorry, I got to get this out of my mind. I'm not unemployed. I'm back to being self-employed, right?
Yes.
So 506 Consulting, folks, for all your educational media needs.
Honestly, with your self-employment, you just did a whole bunch of entrepreneurial things. And that's how entrepreneurs work. And they cast it out, and eventually they make money or they don't. But they head in that direction to try to open up the opportunities. So good on you.
Fortune favors the brave. As we were actually just cycling into the show about 55-ish minutes ago, Doug was actually just asking me about the background, the GIF. And so part of my process with these notes, the WordPress that I quite enjoy, is you know, pulling out appropriate visuals, placing them within the video, placing them within the WordPress. And I sort of, because I get to exercise my narrative muscles a little bit, you know, the storytelling thingy with that, by picking maybe a sort of visual theme or motif or whatever. So I just sort of figured for this show, I mean, we're talking about change. What I really see is not just changes to the aviation industry, but bravery, right? The personal commitment, the personal tenacity that's required to survive, you know, and thrive and succeed in this kind of ever-changing, shifting educational paradigm. So I sort of am thinking of this just in terms of courage of sorts, in a way, almost. And so hence, early attempts at aviation GIF was my part of my search for the notes. Yeah.
So what I'm seeing, because this is distracting me because I'm a sucker for airplanes, but this looks like an airplane from like the 19-teens, 1920s, and it's doing a loop, and then it looks like somebody jumped out.
And that's that's the part that was like the point de grace or whatever for me. I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, I mean, it's, I can't tell you anything about the plane. I can't tell you anything about the setting, but just a little action guy, like ejecting out.
Yep.
That was a real person. And assuming they didn't die upon exit of that plane, I mean, they went on to live whatever kind of life. And now it's just kind of this kind of background thing in our podcast video, which, I mean, we can go down the whole, well, postmodernism really is real, isn't it? But I think we're kind of at the end of the call for that, quite frankly.
Absolutely.
Anyway, dude, is there anything else you wanted to put out there before we shut her down for the day?
Other than go listen to the other interviews, especially the Dave Cormier interview. That was so nice to do late last week, was to sit and listen. And I got to be an audience member. And I really enjoyed that. It was like, wow, what a nice, the conversation just flowed. His book sounds really interesting. I'm going to need
to go
find a copy of that someplace. And I was a little bit jealous. It's like, oh man, I want to write a book and I want to have a conversation like that with other people too. So it was just nice. I really enjoyed it.
We're on our way. And I think just the fact that, I mean, even just in terms of like an interview kind of patter, you know, in terms of the rapport or whatnot. I mean, again, it's just like we've done 50 odd whatever hours of this kind of conversation. And so even the engaging with a guest kind of aspect of it, benefits from that, right? Just because putting in more hours in the seat, right? So it's just, you become better at it. You become more incisive perhaps at managing the conversation. I actually did something unusual for the conversation with Dave, at least unusual for me, is I actually wrote out about 8 or 9 questions, pretty specific in advance, just so that if I felt like I was going to drift, I would just be like, okay, I can pull this in and just make it totally more relevant than just kind of extemporizing. So, I mean, I think that probably served the conversation pretty well as well. I might even try it again. Imagine preparing for the interview.
Yes. Welcome to change.
Okay. Well,
right on. That's all I got.
Awesome. Well, I've had, a swell, sweller than normal time with this conversation here. And thanks everybody for checking it out. Anybody who's out there, wishing you the best with the rest of your weekend and the best of your the rest of your spring season generally. So take care, everybody, and bye for now.
Bye for now.